This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
I want to talk about a specific site that dates back to the time when permanent settlements were on the rise in Southwest Asia. And you have already seen some Neolithic buildings in Trevor's talk, and these were the typical buildings of the Neolithic period that were known at the end of the 20th century. And then Göbekli Tepe was discovered in southeastern Turkey, so a region which had previously been of little interest to archaeologists. And the buildings found at Göbekli Tepe were astonishing. They were unlike anything known before, huge oval buildings with key-shaped pillars, some more than 5 meters high. And the pillars show rich, elaborate design, engravings, as well as high and low reliefs, which depict a diverse range of animals like boars, foxes, birds, or snakes. And moreover, some elements of the relief, as well as the T-shaped form of the pillars, indicate an anthropomorphic nature. And in addition to these oval buildings, rectangular buildings were also found with significantly fewer and smaller T-shaped pillars, but they were considered a later phase and received little attention. Since the start of the excavations at Göbekli Tepe in 1995, the site has received enormous attention. The uniqueness of Göbekli Tepe within the region and also among known Neolithic sites made it exceptionally important when it was discovered, and the findings challenged many established theories in Neolithic research. So it is therefore not surprising that Göbekli Tepe quickly gained popularity not only within the scientific community, but also beyond. The research team put also a lot of effort into science communication, but public relations also became one of the biggest challenges for the project, because the site became subject of the wildest speculations. But regardless of these, let's say, absurd theories, the high popularity also became a problem for the scientific interpretation of the site. And it is this problem that is the starting point for all my research. So what happened? To break it down a bit, over time, the popular science presentations began to influence the scientific presentations more and more, both in terms of language and the storytelling techniques. To give a few examples, with regard to language, popular media often use catchy phrases that evoke a sense of mystery, promise exciting stories of discoveries and achievements, or exploit the psychological impact of unparalleled records, uniqueness, and exclusivity, often by relying on superlatives. And the adoption of these language patterns, in turn, led to the development of a narrative of superlatives at Göbekli Tepe. Furthermore, in popular scientific writings, a coherent narrative is required. But to construct a coherent interpretation of a site where there are still major gaps in research brings a danger in science communication that individual theses or narratives become entrenched as accepted research opinions, both in non-scientific and in scientific spheres. And this is precisely the process that has unfolded at Göbekli Tepe, making it very difficult for new research to challenge the established narratives. So what is the actual narrative about? Göbekli Tepe was the first and only known monumental site that was built by a hunting and gathering society. And another surprising aspect was that no buildings were found that showed domestic activities, but only buildings with an apparently ritual function. Therefore, subsequently, the assumption was made that the place is the earliest temple of humanity. It was described as being located on the highest point of the so-called Germush Mountains, a strategic location that not only efficiently combined the exploitation of different habitats, but also provided control over the region, especially the southern Haran Plain. It's called here Haran Oversee, so the Turkish term. And because of its prominent location, it is believed that Göbekli Tepe was an important meeting place for various hunter-gatherer groups in the region who gathered there and satisfied by feastings with large amounts of meat and the first brewed beer, erected the monumental buildings of Göbekli Tepe. And in the end, as such an important gathering place, Göbekli Tepe must have been a catalyst for neolithization. So neolithization means the sedentarization, agriculture and animal husbandry, or the transition to this. But since the initial discovery of Göbekli Tepe, research has not been stopped, and there is an incredible amount of new research or new research results. And for example, similar sites have been found in the vicinity of Göbekli Tepe, thereby diminishing the site's singular significance and placing it within a more complex context of the early Neolithic in Upper Mesopotamia. And in addition, recent research at Göbekli Tepe has led to a more nuanced understanding of the site, and there is, for example, now evidence for settling activities at the site from its earliest phases onwards. And established terms, such as the concept of the temple, are no longer tenable. And we have no evidence that beer was brewed at Göbekli Tepe, nor that large feasts were held there. But now I want to focus on the landscape and spatial aspects, because that is my area of research. To begin with the question of location, Göbekli Tepe does not occupy the highest peak of the Garmisch Mountains, contrary to the popular descriptions. Instead, it is located on one of the lowest plateaus within the mountain range. But of particular interest is the observation that the broader region does not have a pronounced topographical relief. So, as depicted in the photograph, the mound of Göbekli Tepe is encircled by plateaus of comparable height. So it is really difficult to tell which point is the highest, which is probably why the statement that Göbekli Tepe is the highest point has never been challenged. But it also raises the question of whether people in the Neolithic period would have even thought of searching for the highest point in such a landscape. In terms of visibility, the previous assumptions about the exceptional visibility of Göbekli Tepe don't seem to be right based on the findings. You can see it here on the slide that shows a result map of visibility analysis. And the map shows numerous lines of sight in various directions, primarily in the more distant areas, which lie beyond the outer green circle in the right image. And in these distant views, only very large topographic features such as mountains or valleys are visible, and then only in a blurred form. Vice versa, the plateau itself is also difficult to see from the surrounding area, and what is important to know here is that the plateau of Göbekli Tepe itself is also characterized by elevations and depressions, and the oval monuments or the monumental buildings are located in the depressions. So they are at least visible of the buildings at Göbekli Tepe. But what is interesting is that the smaller plains situated to the east and west of Göbekli Tepe, which have received limited attention in prior research, offer a slightly better view. In addition, a time map analysis I conducted further supports these findings, showing that the accessibility of the Haran Plain is significantly lower compared to the easier access to the smaller plains in the east and west of Göbekli Tepe. But nevertheless, it cannot be said that the surrounding region, and especially the Haran Plain, was actually under effective control. But next to control, the accessibility of the environment is also important if we want to see if the location of Göbekli Tepe made it an efficient place to get resources. A resource analysis I conducted showed that indeed all the resources that were necessary for the construction of the buildings or as everyday goods were available with a reasonable amount of effort. However, the necessary resources were also available in adjacent areas. Due to the small-scale structure of the environment, the same kind of various habitats exploited by the inhabitants of Göbekli Tepe are accessible from almost any place in the wider region. An exception is the central Haran Plain. So the assumption that Göbekli Tepe was deliberately chosen for its prominent location to attract attention and achieve an external effect is, in my view, therefore wrong. In addition, there is no evidence that the location provided any control, nor can the choice of the location be explained on the basis of the distance to different habitats. So what could have been the reason for the choice of location? In my opinion, the decision for the location followed preferences that resulted from the hunter-gatherer way of life, not in a strategic sense, but related to being attracted to places that have known structures and conditions. So Göbekli Tepe's location presented a double advantage. On the one hand, its position at a higher elevation allowed for easy movement across the mountain range, affording a sense of acquiring immediate information about the surrounding area. And on the other hand, the lower-lying plateau, and especially its depressions, where the earliest settlement remains have been discovered, provided a degree of protection and security. But there is another reason that I think played a role too, and I have not yet told you that there is an exception to the resources and their accessibility, namely the Goitred Gazelle. It is assumed that the meat component of the diet at Göbekli Tepe was largely comprised of Goitred Gazelles, and the Goitred Gazelle is a migratory animal that passed through the study area only during summer and autumn. So to gain insights into the preferred routes taken by these animals, I employed GIS-based modeling. And the analysis showed that Göbekli Tepe was positioned between two primary migration routes of the Goitred Gazelle. Additionally, the findings suggest that the area to the east and west of the Germush Mountains served as grazing grounds during different periods, so indicating that Göbekli Tepe was situated between this summer and autumn grazing territories. And the kite-like valley structure of these areas made it easy to encircle the game. So the site therefore offers favorable conditions for integrating seasonal gazelle hunting with the use of permanent resources. Taken all together, the location of Göbekli Tepe can be interpreted as a site that was recognizable, oriented toward the subsistence form of hunting and gathering, and the location of the site is not unique. In fact, it has very typical characteristics that we know from other sites of hunter-gatherer groups. In contrast, we do not have any evidence at all to support the idea that Göbekli Tepe served as a catalyst for the process of neolithization. In regard to the construction of the buildings at Göbekli Tepe, I don't think the buildings were deliberately created as a symbolic landscape or planned structures that was intended to have an external impact. In my opinion, their formation resulted from an organic interaction between available materials, the environmental characteristics, and especially internalized building traditions. So from my point of view, the T-pillar buildings at Göbekli Tepe reflect the transition from non-permanent mobile shelters to permanent structures, and the monumentality of these structures, characterized by their more elaborate design compared to domestic houses, should not be interpreted as a means of assigning a higher value, but rather as having an autotelic nature. That means that the motivation of their construction was intrinsic. I see both the material and the immaterial aspects of the T-pillar buildings as an expression of an engagement with the evolving Neolithic way of life. They served as a means of dealing with the inherent uncertainties of this transition and as a stabilizing measure. These developments are evident not only in the architectural choices made at Göbekli Tepe, but also in its location, as well as in the location of other Neolithic sites featuring T-pillar architecture that have been discovered in the meantime. And the T-pillar sites that have been discovered are marked in red on this map. And based on their site characteristics, I divided the T-pillar sites into three groups. And a presumed chronological sequence of these three groups can be inferred from the dating of individual sites. So Göbekli Tepe can here be seen as representative of the initial phase, characterized by a location that offered both protection through limited visibility and an openness of space due to its distant view. In the subsequent group of T-pillar sites, which form the second phase, we observe patterns that align closely with those of Göbekli Tepe, but with a significant reduction in the openness of space. This suggests a shift in societal mindset where the T-pillar phenomenon reflects a society that was probably holding on to Paleolithic values and perceived itself to be under threat. As a result, these sites indicate an increased tendency to settle in places that are hidden and safe. The third group of T-shaped pillar sites, probably the final phase, shows a shift in settlement patterns towards the plains. While the security aspect still remains, with the settlements being protected by limestone elevations at their rear, the location on the plains provides greater openness of space and proximity to sites to potential agricultural land. So these T-shaped pillar sites are now to be interpreted as sites of collective memory, where the former Paleolithic values are reflected in a traditional but yet transformed manner. In this context, the declining importance in the late pre-pottery Neolithic can be assumed, which led to the abandonment of T-pillar architecture and to further changes in the underlying worldview. And with this quotation, I would now like to come to the synthesis. In 2013, Klaus Schmidt, who directed the excavations at Göbekli Tepe for over 20 years, wrote, it's translated, Göbekli Tepe was undoubtedly a sacred site, acting as a central point of orientation for the Stone Age society of Upper Mesopotamia, a lighthouse in the vastness of space and time. So, in my opinion, Göbekli Tepe indeed has the character of a lighthouse, but primarily in the context of modern research. In the early Neolithic, however, Göbekli Tepe is to be seen as a site that does not stand out among the known sites of its time, but fits into them and whose site conditions were not exceptional, but common. I assume that the place was not designed for efficiency, but harmonized with the living conditions of the hunting and gathering society. And last, that it was a place that did not reflect prominence and dominance, but an uncertainty triggered by changing conditions during the early Neolithic. And I don't want to disappoint you, but even this interpretation may not be entirely correct. Because what I really wanted to show in this talk is that when we try to understand how people in the Neolithic constructed their world, those attempts reveal much more about our construction of the world than they do about the construction of the world in the Neolithic. So that brings me to the end. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.